Deer Trucking Awesome. What do you think of when someone says tough? Honestly, I think of a Toyota truck. Tundra's one mean mother of a truck with a twin-turbo V6, an incredible going power, and the Tacoma claws through terrain with a taller suspension and lots of creature comforts in the cockpit. Both Toyota trucks are decked out with tons of cool features and tech you'll dig. Check them out at Toyota.com, folks.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
Welcome into DNVR Buffs Live. We are, of course, presented by the American Raptors. Head on over to AmericanRaptors.com. Grab your free ticket for one of their rugby matches or stream all of their games. Ryan, we have a great show today. Mike Sanford, the interim head coach of the Colorado Buffaloes football team, will be joining us. But before, some insane news. CU basketball becoming a bit of a powerhouse. Hassan Diop commits to Tad Boyle and the Buffs yesterday. Just your thoughts from this incredible recruiting class.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned it a little bit when they got the commitment from Cody Williams, just how hard Tad Boyle has worked to try and have a breakthrough like this. And I think the Diop news is correlated to the Cody Williams commitment. And I kind of talked about how so much about college athletics is about momentum and building on momentum when you get it. And this is kind of the first domino to fall in that world. And there could be even more dominoes to fall after that, even before these guys get on campus. So I'm really just happy for Tad and that program, because this is the type of breakthrough that I think he's needed. And we saw that this team, you know, they're capable of beating top 10 or top 11 opponents on the road as currently, you know, constructed. You add a five-star talent, a four-star local talent, which, you know, that's important as well, to that. And, you know, you're really cooking with gas.
You're cooking so much that 24/7 Sports has this Buffs basketball recruiting class ranked as the 15th overall recruiting class. On Three has them at 28th overall. I mean, it's one of the best classes in the nation at this point. And you just have, and you're going to add KJ Simpson into this mix, because Pac-12 Player of the Week last week in the opening week of basketball, career high game against Tennessee. The momentum of this program is just really starting to roll. We got the Myrtle Beach Invitational this weekend. First game tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. against UMass.
Love that.
So it's just insane, and it's a lot of fun, especially after what we saw on the football field. A lot of fans really hurting and struggling. This university finally has something for everyone to rally around and really get excited about.
And I hope they do.
Yes.
Because, you know, the Grambling loss caused a lot of grumbling in Buffs well Nation. And it was kind of one of these things like, oh, you know, classic Buffs. This stuff just happens to us. And then they turned right around and they did something that doesn't happen. You know, like, winning on the road in college basketball is so, so hard. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't do it as 15-point favorites.
Yeah, I saw it on Friday.
The night before, two nights before. They're 15.5-point dogs, and they go, and that type of response should tell you, like, what this team is made of and what this coaching staff is made of. But I think KJ Simpson is starting down the path of becoming a legend at CU. And I think when he becomes the veteran leader, right? He'll be a junior next year. When he's the veteran leader for this young, upstart, super talented team, I think that's when he's really going to elevate himself in terms of the way that his legacy is viewed at CU.
KJ Simpson also, I mean, there's six of the top 10 recruits in the modern era of recruiting, if you want to call it that, that are going to be on next year's roster. Cody Williams, Lawson Lovering, KJ Simpson, Quincy Allen, Hassan Diop, and Neat Clifford. There is a small little problem that comes with this commitment, though. The Buffs are now over the 13 scholarship limit for next year. It's a great problem to have. Someone's going to have to either go pro or, I guess, hit the transfer portal. I know we don't want to say those words really on this show, but
yeah, I mean, that's the reality of it. And Tad Boyle honestly has never really had a problem with sitting down with guys after the season and saying, "Hey, like, you're not really in our future plans." And it's kind of a shitty thing sometimes, but at the same time, it also gives those guys an opportunity to go to a place where they have a chance to succeed, you know. And it's the truth. Like, it's not just that they need the scholarship. It's that you've been recruited over. And, you know, you're not going to play nearly as big of a role as you might have thought. So it's the tough business of, of, you know, especially basketball with so few scholarships.
I talked about KJ Simpson's Player of the Week. Do you remember the last Buffs basketball player to get Player of the Week?
I'm just going to guess Derek White.
McKinley Wright.
Okay, I should have guessed McKinley Wright. That was much more recent.
KJ possibly following in those footsteps. We'll see. It's exciting to see. We could talk about that tomorrow. We can bet on basketball tomorrow, college basketball, or the NBA with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers can make any $5 NBA Moneyline bet and get $200 in free bets if your team wins. Tons of stepped up same game parlays going on and tons of deals on the top of the homepage. Have you gone into college basketball betting yet?
A little bit. I just like betting unders in college basketball.
Smart.
I've talked a lot about how I just like watching people miss shots.
The Buffs were actually, or Grambling was actually plus 900 on the money line on Friday. Painful one. You can hit
it
up.
It was Silver Buff who said.
Yeah, Silver Buff's.
Grambling money line and USC minus 34 and a half.
They cover.
That would have been a hell of a parlay.
For a two pick parlay, absolutely. But add even more legs on your same game parlays and get those stepped up odds from DraftKings Sportsbook. Bet on the NBA. Bet on college basketball this whole weekend. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code DNVR. Make any $5 bet this week and get $200 in free bets if your team wins. Again, that's only at DraftKings Sportsbook with promo code DNVR. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Also, shout out to our friends over at Athletic Greens. It's cold and flu season. It's getting cold outside. You got to make sure you're taking care of your body, getting all those vitamins and minerals into you. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/buffs. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/buffs to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. All right. We talked to Coach Stanford on Monday. He's going to join us now. We had a lot of fun. We kind of cut in because we were, I mean, we just got right to it really as soon as he entered the room.
Yeah. It was so cool. Honestly, one of my favorite interviews we've ever done, just because he's so real. And you know, I think there's a little bit of leash that comes with being an interim head coach that allows you to be more of this, but I think you'll hear in the interview, I asked him something like that and he was like, no, I stopped towing the company line when I was like 33. And I just really, really appreciated his candor and the way he talked with us before the interview, during the interview, and after the interview was just, you know, one of the guys.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a ton of fun. I mean, I wish we could have done it longer because there was so much more I wanted to ask him. I think we're ready. Let's throw it up, our interview with Coach Stanford.
Did I go in the middle?
Yeah, sir.
Feels hot.
Star of the show.
Hot seat right there, brother. Yep. How's it going, man?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good.
I'm Ryan.
Mike, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
What is that like? What is that feeling like? Kind of you get that call of just, hey, you know, you're going to get this interim gig. And it's very clear from the outside that you took that nothing to lose approach. Like, I'm just going to pour everything I have into this and just go.
You know, I think a little bit has just been just, I had a lot of good connections with players in the team and I knew that they were going through hard stuff. And I just wanted to make like their experience the best possible experience. Because let's just face it. You know, being 1-9 stinks. Like, it stinks as a coach, stinks as a player. And frankly, I think some of the repetitiveness of losing games, not just in this season, but over time, it accumulates. And if you just make it about drudgery on a daily basis and the pure mundane, obviously it gets really old. So, you know, I've been just honestly just doing things that come into my mind and some wild stuff and just to try to create an environment that, like, going to work, going to practice every day is like an enjoyable time.
All right, Coach, you come in, you're kind of thrown into this position, and then the NIL collective is thrown at you. How's it been just handling that and just the ever-changing landscape, really, of college football with that?
Well, you know, I have a lot of friends that are coaching at places that are extremely, you know, involved in the NIL space. So I know what we're competing against. And what I do think is, I think that the NIL piece of it, I think it leveled the playing field for the Pac-12 with regards to probably what was going on before the NIL in certain parts of the country. I mean, that's just a reality. Yep. And so what you're seeing is you're seeing just a vast improvement, I'd say, of like the top 6 to 8 teams in the Pac-12. And so I've looked at it as my responsibility, knowing what's going on out here, to really convey the message to the CU family, to the donors, that this is what we have to do in order to compete. And if we don't, then we're going to continue to get the same results. And that is a reality. And I think that there are a lot of people that are not comfortable with the NIL space. Well, is everybody comfortable with the TV deals that are millions and millions and millions of dollars that are going directly back into institutions and coaches' salaries? Well, to me, like, the players are the ones that are out there creating that entertainment value. And I want to do what I can to be able to at least help the players on our current roster and future players to come in and feel like CU is a big part of that space. And I believe that's what's going on. So at this point, certainly, like, there's more of an educational element and using the platform of media and press conferences to really talk about the reality of what's out there. You look at even the quarterback deal, right, in our conference. Like, look at the quarterbacks and you know, how did they get to their respective institutions? They just chose them? I mean, there's other aspects to it, and we all know that. Like, that's not a, you know, I wouldn't say it's, like, documented with exactness, but we all know that there's a tremendous amount of money that's going into alluring talent, and the NCAA is making it legal, right. And however that looks like.
What do you think is the biggest key for CU to catch up in that space? Because, you know, like you said, I don't think it's a secret that they're behind in this world. What's the first step, or what are the steps to getting caught up in there?
Creativity. I mean, it's not just solely, hey, XYZ donor, you need to go give all of your life savings to make sure that CU has a good season in 23. There's a lot of different levels that are happening other than just a donor base. There's marketing agencies that are representing student athletes. And then, you know, those relationships are happening outside of the institution. But I even look at Boulder. I mean, look at how many, this is like a marketing, you know, metropolis, like for like young, like up and comers in the marketing space. It's like, how can we get, you know, that community to start representing our players and then start finding more value? And I think we, just like anything else, like we can create relationships between said marketing agencies or really creative marketing elements. And that's what I'm doing a lot of homework myself and talking to a lot of different places across the country to find out exactly what's going on so that we're not getting left in the dust.
That's the core of college football, right? Is marketing at a lot of levels.
It's marketing, it's perception.
It's brand,
and then it's reality, right? Like, let's just call it what it is. Like, we're, the reality of our situation right now is we're 1-9. I am a 1-in, what did it make me? 1-4 head coach right now. And that's a reality. That's a perception. I also know that I believe that there's ways that you can improve that dramatically and quickly. But it doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah. Well, can we go back to when you got the, you know, the call or the conversation, the knock on the door that you were going to be the interim head coach? Kind of what are the first thoughts that go through your mind in that?
You know, it was a hectic day. I think just where we were at and just the feel on game day and even the feel, you know, at Arizona, like, I've been in this business for 40 years as a coach's kid or a player or as a coach, and you just, there's a dread. Yeah. You go into work with, I don't know what today holds. You know, I'm sitting in my office watching the game film with Chandler Durrell. And just talking through different scenarios and stuff that was going on and, you know, personnel and stuff along those lines. And I mean, he had no idea what was going on. And, you know, I go to use the restroom and I see that there was some activity on the floor that typically wasn't there on a Sunday. And
which you're already kind of.
Yeah. I'm like, I know something's going on. And then I, you know, I was asked by Alec Russo, to go up to Rick's office and meet one-on-one with Rick. And, You know, to be honest, I didn't know what that meant. You know, you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously, like he told me that he believed that I could, you know, impact change for these next 7 weeks. I knew it was going to be an uphill climb. Nothing happens truly overnight. I did know that there was an opportunity to impact the roster in a certain different ways and you know, different relationships, different ways of being able to try to optimize what we have on our roster. And, you know, it came to fruition in 1 week. And obviously, like, my belief going into every single game is that we have a chance to win. I do think that the reality of losing 23 players to the portal and then really losing that amount and then not having the ability to essentially replenish it with equal, you know, numbers, you know, put us in a tough situation. And, you know, what you saw is really look at our schedule. You look at Washington, Oregon, SC, even Arizona State, like they lost, some of them lost players, but they also added an influx of established talent. You know, we added really Josh Chandler-Shamedo, great talent, Tommy Brown and RJ Snead, you know, and that's, if you look at some of these other rosters, I mean, nearly half of their starters are incoming proven, you know, players at the Power Five level. So there's been some challenges with obviously just the margin for errors. Then we have to execute at an extremely high level. And we're doing it with a lot of young players. So that's the thing that I've been doing with the team is just keeping us on the up and up with our attitude and our mentality to make sure that we go forward and really do our best.
Just going back to, you know, you were hired in just December. In October, you become the interim head coach. Personally, I just started working this job in August, and I learned really quickly how special this place is. And it seems like same thing for you. Just how did that come to be? How did CU come to mean so much to you in just such a short time?
It for me, it dates back like almost the time I was probably 7 or 8 years old, which would put it consequently at 89, 90, 91. You know, pretty good time of CU football. So a lot of people don't know this about me, but when I was 5 years old, my dad coached at Purdue. And there was a brand new graduate assistant to coaching who had just gotten done playing pro football, and that was Brian Cabral. Mm-hmm. And I actually, you know, my mom would drop me off at Coach Cabral at Becky's house, and they had kids. We played together. And really through the years, even though, you know, Coach Cabral came back to CU, and then my dad ended up hiring him again at Indiana State. They worked together at the tail end of Coach Cabral's career, and Coach Cabral is still here working with us really, you know, really intimately with our football program. I had always heard, even from the time I was five, about what an unbelievable place the University of Colorado was and how sweet of a town Boulder was. And the first time I got to see with my own eyes was when I was coaching at Stanford in 2012. In that actual game, we made the quarterback change from Josh Nunez to Kevin Hogan. And that game itself, I was in this stadium, and I'm like, this place is unbelievable. It's exactly what Coach Cabral had been talking about for years. I would love to coach here. Fast forward, obviously that year, that change ended up really reeling off, I think, 3 Rose Bowl games for Stanford over the next 5 years. But what the thing that happened for me last year is I'm coaching the University of Minnesota. We play at Boulder. Same thing happens again to me. I'm like, this place is incredible. And a lot of it was my relationships. Shannon Turley, I've worked with him at Stanford. Brian Cabral's been essentially like almost an uncle to me for years. Coach Durrell, I recruited Chandler at Stanford. You know, there were quite a few. Darian Hagan and I have known each other. We've worked camps together. He and I, our personalities are very compatible. So it was weird. I was on the Minnesota sideline, but I actually felt more of a personal connection to a lot of the guys that were at CU just because of relationships and a background.
Interesting. Just for, again, you personally, I mean, this is obviously a huge opportunity for you. If you could kind of look into the crystal ball, once the season's done, what do you think it looks like for you?
I don't know. I really don't. I think the thing that I want the most of anything is I want what's best for the players. I think that this has strangely become, even though I've only been here for now 11 months, I basically moved here in January. So, you know, just I've never probably felt more connected to a group of players, like truly, than I have really over these last 10, 11 months. I think I was going through, you know, a hard part in my football career. I've had tremendous highs and I've also had lows, but welcome to coaching, right? So I think just that common ground that I felt with the players, I think that's really kind of almost continued through and with our coaching staff and with them. I truly just want what's best for them. And, you know, I've made it pretty clear. I want CU to retain the talent we have on this roster. I think that's incredibly important. And whatever that looks like, I don't know. But I'm not having those conversations right now because we're getting ready to play Washington. I'm not having those conversations next week because we're playing Utah. But there's a reality that this thing is coming to an end as it relates to the 2022 season. And so people are starting to have those, you know, at least those thoughts about what's best for my future. And what I want for them is what's best for them.
In relation to that connection that you're feeling, how special was that Cal win for you personally? Where does that rank among moments in your coaching career?
I think it was. I think there are two moments that really stand out to me, and it was in the top two, which is crazy, especially when you're in the record we are. But there's so much more than just records in the life of a football coach, and even in the life of a coach's wife and his kids, and even my parents, you know. And the I think the two that stand out are certainly that game, just because of the adversity and just seeing like just absolute pandemonium and chaos when you're 1-5. Yeah. Like that's just epic to have a chance to see that, like, oh, yeah, to see a fan base that fired up to win a football game, to overcome odds, to be 14.5-point underdogs or wherever we were, or something along those lines. And then the other one was I had a chance to return to my alma mater, my first year as an offensive coordinator with the Boise State. We started the year out 2-2, and at Boise State, 2-2 is like being 0-12. You know, the expectations at Boise State when you coach there is that you score 68 points a game, that you hit on 12 trick plays, and that the Statue of Liberty, you know, ends up leading to a proposal in the end zone. But, you know, we were 2-2, lost at Air Force. It's been a little bit of a nightmare place for me personally, but we lost at Air Force, and you know, basically galvanized the troops. I think we ended up winning 10 straight, 9 straight, won the Fiesta Bowl, and I was the play caller for that team. And just like overcoming that, and then also to do it at the place that I coached at, probably one of the bigger regrets I have is I left that to go be the offense coordinator at Notre Dame, which is a tremendous experience. But just knowing how special that was to be at the place that I went to school at, I think was obviously like the two best moments. And what makes those moments so special are like, and I remember like the visuals, like, is like hugging a player and then your wife and your kids waiting for you right after to mm-hmm. give them a hug. Like, just to me, that like, that's where you see the coinciding of your worlds. Like your two families, which are ultimately one family, are like your relationship with the players and then your relationship with really your most important family, which is your wife and kids.
And you also got to see, like, you did make an impact, you know, like you took over the gig, and I think there was a lot of belief out there that like this team is just cooked. And, you know, I don't think anyone would have been necessarily surprised if you guys lost that week, you know, and it has to be special to be like, okay, the things that I thought we needed to change, the things that I wanted to implement actually did make an impact.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. And what I crave so much, and like I just rack my brain in week in, week out, is like, what else can I do to recreate that moment, you know? And that's, there's truly nobody wants that more for these players than me. Obviously, like, it could be said that I want it for myself and all that stuff. And like, just seeing like what those players have been through, the amount of their teammates that left them to go to other places and then are starting on top 10 teams. Like, there's a lot of that out there. Just, I want to create that for them so bad. And as we know, I mean, the road's been hard, you know, and I like, we're not going to back down to it. The thing that I still like, will, I know for my entire career that I will never forget, is just like how hard these players fight. And it doesn't show up in the box score always. It shows up in growth. And then where I see it the most is if somebody came to our practices like on a Tuesday or Wednesday and they had no idea what our record was, they'd be blown away that we're a 1-8 football team or a 1-9 football team, depending on the week. So that's, I believe that the process itself, like if your process stays at a really high level, somehow, some way, a breakthrough's coming.
Friday, you guys went up against USC. I mean, they're pretty much the class of this conference right now. But you go back 25, 30 years, CU was the class of their conference. In your opinion, just from what you've seen, I've asked Darian Hagan this, a lot of people this actually over the last few weeks, but what do you think CU needs to get back to that level, to get back to where everyone wants it to be?
You know, I think, obviously, I think that I believe that we have really, really good young talent here. I think we also have some really good players that are that could potentially come back for a fifth or sixth year. I think that we need that continual growth that happens year in, year out. And then I think we need to be very aggressive in addressing the elephants in the room with regards to roster deficiencies. You know, and that's depth issues. Like, I think right now our biggest issue and why I think second, third, fourth quarter, sometimes things get away from what could be a really good start, is depth. You know, when everybody else, like you look at USC, Travis Dye goes down,
right?
Unbelievable player, maybe one of the best in the country. So, I mean, the other two, three backs that played are dudes. Like, they're just over and over, and they're not just good players. Like, they're, like, dynamic playmakers, right? You know, and I think that that's where we need to go. There's certain positions this year where we're holding on, you know, by thread, you know, just to be able to put, you know, the amount of number of guys out there. Like, we went into the Arizona game offensively with Brady Russell was out, Caleb Fournier was out, Austin Smith was ruled out like game time, and we're looking out there. We like to play two tight end sets, yeah. And we're looking out there like we don't really have bodies left. You know, so, you know, Eric Olson filled in admirably. Louis Passarella went from being, you know, not even really being active like because of his injuries to playing in a Pac-12 game. So I think the depth piece is really important, and I think that the name of the game is acquisition of talent. Period. Acquisition of talent. I think that culturally you have what it takes here in Boulder. I think that the acquisition of talent also includes the recruitment of your own roster and then making sure that you use the high school level, you know, in the state of California, starting with the state of Colorado, and then going into Texas and certain other niche areas. I think high school needs to be your foundation. And then you got to just be very aggressive with patching up depth issues with roster in the portal.
You mentioned like the amount of players that went out and, you know, the talent you were able to get back in. What has to change there to make it so if 23 players want to go, you know, you can get in 23 more that are, you know, of the caliber of a Christian Gonzalez or a Brendan Rice, guys that you guys have had to face in the last couple of weeks, which has got to be frustrating. Maybe not as much for you as it is for, you know, their former teammates.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's very multifaceted. I think prior relationships help. You know, obviously, like, having known them either from the recruiting side of things from high school or in the case of sometimes, I mean, look at, you know, what happened at SC. You know, why did they get Caleb Williams? He was Lincoln's quarterback at SC. You know, and certainly we all know the other part of it is NIL, right? Like, that's – to be competitive, that's – you know, if you want to win that level – And you have to patch the holes that exist. You have to go that spit. You have to go in the NIL side of things. You know, I think, you know, the other part of it too is just things that are going on, like at all times, is making sure that this is a friendly place for a transfer to come to with regards to being able to get admitted, which hasn't been a big issue, but, you know, everything from their credits transferring over, like there's a lot of different things that, you know, it's not just a Colorado thing. There's different schools that have different requirements. And so there's a lot of things that people can't get in front of and talk about at a press conference, but you know, that we're working on, Rick George is working on it. And I think that this becomes a place that you obviously, you know, we got to address those things. And we are.
Is that kind of an opportunity for you too, to just shed light on those things and maybe be a little more vocal than someone who maybe has to, I don't know, for lack of a better term, toe the company line?
No, I think I towed the company line when I was 33 years old as a head coach. And frankly, like, I think sometimes first of all, the most important people that I speak to are between 18 and 22 years old. This generation can sniff out BS so quickly. This generation is the generation that relates to transparency, that relates to you being honest about where you're at and what the issues are. Like even this week, like just acknowledging how really this is hard, not just for you. It's hard for me. It's hard for my family. Like the uncertainty is hard for our family. And so like, regardless of my position, like I've learned that I'm going to be transparent. And if it can help push CU forward. This is the job that I was called to do right now. I don't know what's going to be called to do, you know, in 3 months or in 2 weeks. I have no idea. I really don't. But the job that I've been called to do and that I've assigned to do, I'm going to do everything in my power to push it in the positive direction. That's what really the last 7 weeks have been, around 8 weeks, is doing everything in my power to just push CU with the help of our administration and with our players to push CU in the best possible direction we can going forward.
I'd love to talk some ball, man. So you've been a lot of places. You've coached a lot of really talented players. Who stands out to you, though, as the most talented players you've coached?
Well, there's a guy named Andrew Luck that was pretty good. You know, that was a really fun time in my life. I was young. I was 25. So I had a previous relationship with Jim Harbaugh. My dad had coached the receivers at the Chargers. Jim was the quarterback in his, like, 15th year or something. And he's a coach's kid. I'm a coach's kid, and I was always at practice and gravitated towards him. And I was the guy that used to warm him up in pregame warmups. And if he couldn't find me, he'd go, hey, where's Mike?
Yeah.
You know, fast forward, I was a GA for my dad at UNLV, and I didn't want to go the route where I was just kind of holding on to my dad's name. And I wanted to, you know, create my own path and create my own niche and build my own relationships. And so I got on a plane, and I flew out to Stanford. To San Francisco, and then I was on a Southwest flight from Vegas, because of UNLV, to San Francisco, and I was in a suit and tie, and I was just gonna literally just go up to Stanford, because you can't get on the phone with the head coach ever when they just get named. So it's the day of Jim's press conference. I'm on the flight, and I was thinking about what I'm gonna say when I go to the press conference, and sure enough, right down the aisle, right at me comes Jim Harbaugh. On my flight. So, yeah. And guess what I did?
I don't know. What do you do?
I ducked. Because it wasn't my, like, I was like, this isn't how I planned this thing going. Right. And, like, I had it worked up in my mind. I was going to go. And so I called my wife, called Anne Marie, and I was like, hey, Coach Harbaugh is on the flight. What should I do? She's like, go talk to him. I'm like, this isn't how I, like, drew it up. And sure enough, like, halfway through the flight, I finally conjured up enough courage to go up, sat down with him, and he asked, he's like, Mike, what are you doing here? I'm like, well, I came to see you. So from that experience, I was over time, it was about a month or so later, I was named the quality control coach there. It was a really cool configuration, because I was – Coach Harbaugh was the quarterback coach. Mm-hmm. I was the quality control guy, and he's a head coach. He's building a program from scratch, and they were 1-11 the year before he got there.
Yeah.
And so I did a lot of stuff with, you know, recruiting, evaluation, and, you know, I was a big part of the evaluation with other coaches on the staff. Andy Boo was the Houston recruiter. Jim loved Andrew Luck. But, you know, like, I had a chance to run the quarterback academy at Stanford. We had all these great guest speakers come in. And, like, I think Joe Montana was there. I can't remember if John Elway came that year or not. He came one of the 2 years and spoke to the group. But Andrew Luck was there. And I had like, my own little itinerary for Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
And the other quarterback that we were kind of deciding between was Sean Renfrey, that played at Duke, and then he'd been in the NFL as a backup. And both really good players. And it was almost kind of a dueling head-to-head deal. And, you know, Andrew Luck's truly the most intellectually gifted player I've ever been around. And the thing that people don't realize about him is just how incredibly athletic and powerful he was. Like, he threw the ball with ease, but he was like a 4.5, like, he was like a high, like, 4.5 40 guy, but it wasn't just a 4.5. Like, he ran through people.
Like Josh Allen today, kind of.
Yeah, and very similar. Just like almost just like this once in a lifetime talent. And so I had a chance to be with, he redshirted the first year in 2008. And I had a chance to work with him that year as a quality control guy. And then I was fortunate enough I left and got my first full-time job at Yale. And then I went to Western Kentucky with Willie Taggart his first year there. And then when David Shaw got the head job at Stanford, I was fortunate enough to come back in Andrew Luck's final year. And I was the running back coach, but it was fun to be, you know, to be a part of kind of his beginning and his end there at Stanford. And there's so many other people that were more involved with his development and all that, but just to be around him and see his impact on the team really see the impact on changing the trajectory of Stanford football was incredible.
Yeah.
Looks like we have a little technical difficulty there.
Yeah, unfortunately. We were just getting to the good stuff.
What's the course of action here? All right, she's going to try and figure it out, see if we can play the rest of the interview there. Actually, kind of a good stopping point just to kind of, you know, it's like an intermission.
Yes.
We can kind of digest some of the stuff that he's talked about so far. What was the most interesting thing to you?
I think just his attachment to CU. I mean, honestly, that was what I was most curious to ask. Just because you see this guy come in December, and then all of a sudden, all these responsibilities are thrown on him, and he not only embraces it, but, I mean, he's done well with it, too, with all the responsibility that he's had to take on. And, I mean, just the Cal game and his stories from that were amazing. What about you, though? What blew you away?
I think that's a really good one, just because of what, I don't know, what you saw from him in that Cal game was so passionate and so... for lack of a better term, like heart on your sleeve style coaching. And I guess to hear him say that he feels closer to this team than any team he's ever been around in a lot of years of coaching, was evident that day.
Yeah.
You know, and in the way that he was running around celebrating, he talked about the chaos around him, but the chaos that he, you know, you saw from him, was really special. And I remember thinking that day, like, man, that feels like a former player,
yep,
who got this opportunity, who, you know, got to put on the black and gold and run out behind Ralphie as a player, and that's why it meant. But he's not that, you know. And it's interesting hearing about his connections with Brian Cabral. Brian Cabral is a special, special person. And you know, when I was a kid, he mentioned what 7, 8, 9 when he met Brian Cabral. I think I was 7, 8, 9 when I met Brian Cabral at CU football camp. And you know, he kind of like runs he would run the show there for Gary Barnett. And I just remember thinking, like, man, he's one of those people that you can tell why that people connect with him and feel like he's special. So that was cool. And then finally, you know, without saying it, because he can't quite say it, he did address the reasons why CU is not competing at the level that everyone wants them to compete at. 23 guys out and a few guys back in that, yep, really a lot of them aren't as good as some of the guys that went out. And, you know, you have players, like he mentioned, starting on top 10 teams, several. I mean, I guess Oregon's probably out of the top 10 now, are they?
I think they're down to 12.
Either way.
Mark Perry starting at TCU.
Top 10 team, yep.
Number 4.
Yep.
You have Caleb or Brendan Rice.
Playing
at USC. They're
Mekhi.
Mekhi's also there. Christian Gonzalez, as you mentioned, at Oregon.
So those are guys who are capable of playing at top 10 teams, who were playing for the Buffs last year, who are no longer playing there. And, you know, again, he didn't quite get into it entirely. But acquisition of talent, that's the name of the game.
To go back to what you were talking about with just loving the players and how he was acting on the field in the celebration with that Cal game, I go back to his introductory press conference when really one of the first things he said was he's just got to love these players, like immediately recognize the situation, immediately recognize how down these players were and just how difficult it had been those opening 5 games of the season, just getting blown out week in, week out, and the ability to really turn a team that was, I mean, they weren't competitive besides the first half against TCU, those first 5 games, and all of a sudden they come out with a completely different fire. And they win the game, of course, as everyone knows. It was just impressive, though, that the players also really gravitated to him, and every player I've talked to really since then, there's nothing but glowing remarks about Coach Samford.
Yeah, and, you know, this was going to be one of my reactions at the very end of it, but I just kind of wish he got a different shake here. And the reason I say that is just because of the way the schedule played out, because I really think after being around him, he has what it takes to be a head coach in the college ranks.
Yes, absolutely. That's my biggest takeaway, I think, is he did himself a lot of favors, I think, in the eyes of other ADs and coaches just around college football. Odds are this guy's probably not going to be back at CU next year, just after the Utah game, really. And they're going to bring in a new coach, so it's tough to see, but I mean, he did nothing but help himself, and I can't help but imagine he'll be at a good program coming this next fall.
For sure, and I'd really like to see him get another look. It's not going to end up being here, and one of the reasons, it's not the entire reason, but one of the reasons is because of the schedule. Like, I think if he didn't end the season on this absolute,
gauntlet?
Yeah, the word is a gauntlet of what's going to end up being five straight games as 30-point dogs? Or four?
Four.
Four straight games as 30-point dogs is probably what this thing is going to shake out to at the end. And honestly, almost none of that is Mike Sanford's fault. You know what I mean?
100%.
Had the schedule been flipped with some of the more winnable games at the end, I think there's a world in which he plays himself at least into the conversation where we're talking at the end of this, okay, it's down to, and I'm just giving random examples here, Bronco Mendenhall, Tom Herman, and Mike Sanford is getting a real look because of the way he was able to turn things around. You know, I think that that would have been an option. It's not going to end up being that way because part of this hire is about galvanizing the fan base. And as much as you and I could sit here and tell people this guy's awesome, which I think comes through pretty well in this interview, that wouldn't sell season tickets.
No.
And it's not necessarily his fault, but it's the reality of the situation.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think we talked about it when we did our tier list after Durrell was fired. I mean, we had Sanford down low just because, I mean, it wasn't realistic at the time, even if he turned in wins against Arizona State, any of the other teams. I mean, Oregon State, too, you could throw in there, I guess. But
Oregon State would have been Arizona State would have been an interesting one.
It would have been massive. You don't know. I mean, the Buffs win that game, they were within 8 points at the end.
Yeah.
It's a completely different story, potentially.
Yeah. 100%. Anything else that sticks out to you there?
I mean, I loved hearing him talk about just his time at other programs with Andrew Luck. The story that was cut off about Jim Harbaugh and everything. There was a clip about him talking about Bill Walsh, that he was standing next to Jim Harbaugh and Bill Walsh.
We might get to that update for the listeners. We're working on re-exporting the file and getting getting the full thing there.
It was corrupt.
Yeah. Aww.
So... We're trying. RG and I are working hard.
Well, he was talking a lot about college football, so it isn't a coincidence that the file was corrupt.
That's true. You got to be corrupt to win these days, I suppose.
A little bit. So hopefully we'll get to the end there. But I think just in terms of his personal experience, I thought it was really interesting him saying that his biggest regret was leaving his alma mater, Boise State, to go be the offensive coordinator at Notre Dame.
Yep.
And let me start by saying, there's no way you could blame a guy for taking the Notre Dame offensive coordinator job, but that definitely turned his career down a totally different path.
100%. And you just look at the coaches and the teams that he's coached for. You mentioned Andrew Luck, David Shaw, Jim Harbaugh. I mean, he's been around, and he's done a lot of impressive things at a lot of different universities. As you mentioned, I think really the best is yet to come in his coaching career. He's only 40. I mean, in coaching years, that's a baby almost.
And his soul is about 30.
Yes.
At least, or at most.
But he's got the right knee of an old man with the torn meniscus.
Yeah. It's so tough just because of the way things went for him at Western Kentucky. To see the path, I guess, for him to get another job as a head man, but... I don't know. If I had a friend who was an athletic director at a smaller school, I would be hitting them up right now saying, if you have an opening, you should interview this guy.
I think he's going to get some decent offensive coordinator looks in the very least this next coaching cycle. I mean, how would you feel, say, Arizona State hires Mike Sanford to be the head coach of their football team?
I would be thrilled for Mike Sanford.
Yes, absolutely.
That would be my first reaction.
But for the Buffs...
I don't know. It would be interesting. I think he clearly has the personality traits to recruit well.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot to be... I don't know. It's so hard to evaluate his offense and his offensive coordinator role this year just because, you know, they were so devoid of talent in a lot of different areas. I think, you know, you look at the Cal game and I guess the short stint of Owen McCown as like the most legitimate evaluation you can make of his offense this year. But, you know, he hasn't necessarily been a lights out offensive coordinator at some of his most recent stops. And again, after spending time with him, I feel like he's more head coach material than he is offensive coordinator material, honestly.
For sure. Just his, I mean, you talk about the different types of head coaches in football. You have like your masterminds, your Sean McVays, and then you have your CEO type coaches, the guys that really rally the troops. And I mean, I think he fits into that latter category for sure. I mean, not to discredit his offensive acumen in any way, but as he mentioned in the interview too, the Buffs have dealt with so many injuries at so many positions. He mentioned tight end. This running back room has just been, every week it's someone new with the most carries on the team. Receiver's been really tough, obviously, with Jordan Tyson going down. You mentioned the quarterbacks. Offensive line's been reshuffled. I mean, you name it, he's had to coach through it this year. Yeah. So it's really impressive that he stuck with it.
Yeah. You know, I will be a Mike Sanford fan for life.
100%.
100%. And I'll be following whatever happens next. There is a world, I think, in which maybe, you know, he stays around in some role for the next head coach. I think anyone and everyone would probably think that, including him, would probably think that's a small chance, but not a zero chance. But I think you're right that he's going to get legitimate looks. And I think he has what is one of the more important qualities, no matter what job you're doing in the college ranks, and that's charisma.
Yes.
You know, you have to be able to go and talk to kids' parents, and you got to talk to kids as well and connect with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me, it was my first time ever talking to him, period. I felt like we made a connection, you know, within the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's a really, really, really valuable quality in the college world. And again, you know, in a different world where he isn't brought onto an already sinking ship, I think, you know, I would have hoped that he had a long career here.
What if the Buffs had Coach Sanford as their offensive coordinator last year? How much is different, do you think?
Don't know. I really don't know. I feel like a coach can only go as far as their quarterbacks are going to take them, and the Buffs had the exact same problem last year that they have this year, which is a complete and utter lack of talent at that position. Now, Owen was a difference maker, I felt like, at that, and we didn't quite get to it here. What's the latest update?
It's exporting.
Okay, cool. I was going to say, you guys will hear it, but he talked about what Bill Walsh told him about quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Should we talk about that now, or should we save it, Al?
I don't know.
Okay. We'll save
whatever
it.
Whatever you guys want
to
do.
We'll come back to it at the end. But
he's He's Russian.
I think Owen McCown checks those boxes that he got to.
He has what Coach Sanford talked about, and you know the biggest thing with Owen McCown that everyone knows is just his body. I mean, he obviously got hurt in that Cal game, took a bad hit, and it wasn't a severe injury. He's been like playing roles on the scout team at practice and stuff the past few weeks, but I mean, I think the combination of when the injury occurred, the fact that he could still redshirt, and that he just needs to pack on some pounds, man.
And what better way to truly illustrate, because anyone and everyone can say, I want what's best for the players.
Right.
But Mike Sanford said that when we talked to him. And what better way to illustrate that than most likely redshirting Owen McCown at this point? Like, to me, that is one of the more honorable things he could have possibly done. And truly shows that he does put those players first and care about them. If Owen McCown doesn't play again this year, he keeps all of his eligibility. And, you know, he's a guy who's banged up, but very, very clearly was Mike Sanford's best option to play quarterback. And if Mike Sanford was going to become the head coach at Colorado, he needed Owen McCown to do it.
100%.
And he made the decision that was best for Owen McCown, not the decision that was, and he, I guess, was a part of that decision, but that was best for Owen, not what was best for Mike Sanford.
The Owen McCown decision, I mean, it's probably the most notable one, but I talked to Chase Penry today at practice, actually. He was the punt returner to start the year for the Buffs, got hurt 3 games in, and he returned against USC last week to be the punt returner and got to play, you know, get some of that valuable experience as a young guy, and then he's going to get the red shirt too. So, yep. I mean, it's going back to what Coach Sanford said. He really does care about his players, and he's doing what's best by them, not just Owen McCown because he's the quarterback, but it's literally everyone on the roster, and you could feel just the intense love all these players and all of his coaches, frankly, too, have for him. It's just a shame that this is how all the injuries and just the shape of the roster had to be for him, though.
Yeah, for sure. And I hope that when, you know, he's looking for his next gig and if for whatever reason, you know, he gets an opportunity to be a head coach again and someone calls Rick George or calls Josh McCown and says, hey, what can you tell me about Coach Stanford? I think that will go a long way for him.
I think I hate to bring this up, but just judging by the transfer players and the success they had elsewhere, I mean, could we rule out Mike Stanford being a playoff offensive coordinator next year for a team or something? I mean, it's definitely in the cards.
For sure. And again, I think that, you know, he can be a real asset to any coaching staff. And I will say this. I obviously am always rooting for the Buffs to win.
Mm-hmm.
I'm rooting so much harder for them to somehow pull off a miracle in these last 2 weeks now, just because I feel like this team and, you know, he deserves, you know, another moment like they had after Cal.
Yeah, absolutely. And this would, of course, be the biggest one. I mean, the Pac-12 has been absolutely crazy this year. There's been upsets, seems like, almost every week. Who's to say that the Buffs maybe couldn't just scrounge up one more game, just one more good fight?
I mean, heck, if JT Shrout hits that pop pass against USC, they take a 10-9 lead. Caleb Williams at the time was like 1-for-5 or something with an interception. I'm not saying they win the game, but you at least see that they can, for a quarter and a little quarter plus, they could compete with USC. So anything can happen.
100%. I think we are all good to go.
Yes, I think we're good.
We got it back. All right. Do you want to hit an ad before we get to the...
Yes, actually. I want to tell you guys about our great friends at Ivaca TV. Ivaca, I mean, if you're a Denver sports fan, it is the TV service to have. You can catch, I think still, is our 100 Invisible Threads still up on Ivaca?
Oh, yeah.
So you can go check that out. Done by our guy Ryan Green over here, who, of course, made this awesome video and helped us out interviewing Coach Stanford. With Ivaca TV, you can sign up for just $25 a month plus the $5 receiver. As I mentioned, the trailer for 100 Visible Threads is live on our YouTube channel now. But go to Ivaca TV and set yourself up with evoca.tv/DMVR to watch your favorite Colorado sports teams and original DMVR content. Let's get back to the interview.
I'm sure the Andrew Luck eval was pretty easy, but we already see how hard it is for NFL teams to pick out the best college quarterbacks and see which ones are going to translate to the NFL. And that's, you know, you have a lot more information when you're evaluating high school kids. What do you think is the most important part of finding a good quarterback that's going to translate to the college level? I don't know if you know this or if you've heard it since you've been here, but it's been since Coy Detmer that CU had a quarterback drafted in the NFL draft. It's been a long time they've struggled with that. I'm curious what you think is the key, I guess, to actually, you know, evaluating a high school quarterback.
Well, I was also fortunate that in that 2 years at Stanford, ironically, the week that Sean Renfrey and Andrew Luck came to kind of compete for who was going to get the rose ceremony rose at the Bachelor, Bachelorette it would have been, I believe.
Yeah.
No, Bachelor. The thing that we did is Bill Walsh was hanging around Stanford a lot. And it was in his last days.
Yeah.
And so we all sat down and before the camp started, it was like the day before, we sat down with the entire staff around the table, GAs, QCs. And it was like a moment that I'll never forget. And Coach Harbaugh, we're watching these two players and Coach Harbaugh asked Bill Walsh, who do you think's better? You know, and Coach Walsh said, I think they're both really good players. And I was like, okay, that's not necessarily the answer that I expected, right? But they were really good players. They're both great high school players. But Coach Harbaugh asked probably what, I'm so thankful to him to this day for asking this question, but he said, hey, Coach Walsh, what were you looking for in a quarterback when you're evaluating? Like, dude, this is gold, right? Like, this is as good as it gets. And so he said two things that have stayed with me forever, and I think they're even more impactful today than they even were maybe 30 years ago. He said, the first thing that I look for in a quarterback is instincts. You know, this is how he kind of described it. Like, a quarterback that knows, you know, when to throw the ball away, when to tuck it and run, you know, when to try to force a ball in there, understand situations. He's like, and some of those things can't be taught. You know, and I've learned that over the years. Like, I can train footwork. I usually can't fully change motions, right? Like throwing processes, those are 18 to 22 years of just muscle memory. I can change footwork. I can train an offense, but when the play breaks down, some of that stuff is just God-given. And that's the reason that there's only really eight really good quarterbacks in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So he said instincts number one. And then the second one, I think so incredibly important to this day, is that I was always looking for a quarterback that could give me at least two first downs a game with their legs, which I think is so important. You look at our conference right now, right? Who are the top four teams right now?
USC.
Is Caleb Williams have good instincts?
Oh, yeah.
Can he get you two first downs a game with his legs?
Easily.
Michael Penix. Yes.
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 Okay.
Bo Nix. Yep.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And then let's go with
I'm interested to see who you would say.
Hold on. I had it. It was in there. Just a lot going on. Gosh, dang it.
Cam Rising.
Is it going to be Delora?
No. Yeah. And I would say top five, but Cam Rising, frankly, to me, he's the king of the castle in the conference because he's won a championship, right? And maybe not quote unquote as flashy as the other guys, but you want to talk about instincts, toughness, you know, extending plays with his legs, going, you know, putting his head down. I mean, that dude's a tough son of a gun, you know. And that's ultimately, like, I think that's a critical piece of this here at CU, is just going forward, you know, what that looks like, you know. And obviously, you know, we can sit here and talk about what we have in house, but you know, I believe in those players, but I think, like, to get to a championship level, do you have incredible instincts, one? And can you be a guy that can create? Which ultimately, that's that other piece, is the creation. Because last time I checked, I watched that USC game over and over and over. How many on-time throws that were play design did Caleb make? Very few.
Yeah.
What was it all?
No. Improvisation, running around.
That's what it is. It's the name of the game, right? Mm-hmm. The guys in the NFL right now. Right? Like, how many of them are just purely on-time players? Tom Brady is, but even then, he's got that ability, even at 44, 45, to give you that 2 feet of movement, a little extra time, and then throw something off schedule. Right? That's the name of the game.
Yeah. I mean, the Colts won yesterday, and Matt Ryan had a huge, like, 22-yard run.
It felt like a 90-yard run. It looked like me out there with my torn meniscus and knee brace. Yep. I think we're about the same age, too.
I don't want to take too much of your time. Just one last question. You've called a lot of plays in your career, a lot of big plays. Which one stands out, I guess, amongst them, all of them, all the rest?
You know, I'd say number one was the Fiesta Bowl in 2014 at Boise State. We played Arizona. It was Rich Rod. They had a phenomenal team that year. They had a good defense. I can't remember who their quarterback was. He was a good player. He was a Polynesian kid that transferred there.
Solomon?
I think he transferred from is it Anu Solomon? Yeah, that's right. I think that's right.
Yeah.
So it was 2014. And we went up. I think it was either – we went up 21-0, and it was like – It was really good. There were a lot of on schedule plays.
Yeah.
So, like, I was kind of feeling myself, right? So you're up 21-0. I can't remember if it went 21-7 or 21-0, but going into the second quarter, what I talked to you guys about with the expectations of Boise State fans, you win the Fiesta Bowl and you call Statue of Liberty.
Right.
So we recreated a brand new version of Statue of Liberty that I called America. M-U-R-I-C-A, right? So the signal was, you know, it's very patriotic. It was, you know, there was the hand over the heart. The, you know, we called it, and Jay Ajayi was our running back, absolute freak.
Yeah.
We got into a really funky, unbalanced formations. We put three guys on the line of scrimmage. Nobody was weak. We had Jeremy McNichols and Jay Ajayi in the backfield. Motioned out Jeremy McNichols, faked the bubble to him, had everybody on the O-line screen pass. Or scream. We had them yell scream. You literally saw everybody run this way. And then the traditional Statue of Liberty ball handling. Jay Ajayi actually created the play. Like, there were two guys that he ran through their face. And actually, he broke somebody's arm in the process of a stiff arm. And that guy went down. And I think it was, I can't remember, it was a really good player. Might have been Scooby Wright.
Scooby Wright, yeah.
Yeah, it was either him or another player. And all of a sudden it's 28-7 or 28-0. And I'm like, I got this. And that was my first year as a play caller. So, like, you know, the thing that's crazy is I'll say this and I'll say it over and over again. The guys that make the magic are the players. You know, like, I think that there's a lot of really good play callers in football. There are times where you're just in that kind of flow state as a play caller, but ultimately it's the players that make the plays. And what I learned, you know, even looking back, is we had a really special team with special talents. They were a veteran team that kind of worked together in the offensive lines. They'd gone through a lot of stuff Hadn't won really at that level, you know, in probably 2, 3, 4 years, Fiesta Bowl type style. But they went through those hard times together, and they're the ones who made the magic happen, not a play call.
Coach, thank you so much for coming on, man. It was an absolute blast. Looking forward to what you do with this team the rest of the season. And it's honestly been a lot of fun watching you out there. So
no, I appreciate it. Appreciate you guys, your guys' support too. It's really kind of a cool platform you guys have. And it's to me, it's like where everything's going right now with digital and marketing and media and everything. It's really super cool. I'm a big podcast listener, so this will be cool.
Sweet. Well, after the season, we'll have to get you down to the bar.
Oh, cool.
The studio.
You guys have? I didn't know about this.
So we have a bar on the first level, and then on the second level is where we have all of our studios where we record everything.
What's the best draft beer?
I mean, we're Breckenridge Brew sponsored, so I honestly love the Strawberry Sky. It's like a nice light, got a little sweetness to it.
We went spring break, the family, first time we'd been to Breck, and we were stayed pretty much right across from the Breck Brewery's awesome place. Oh, so they can't beat the Colorado microbrewery scene.
Exactly.
It's pretty unbelievable. So I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Coach.
Yep.
Full interview with Coach Samford. What a guy.
What a guy. I mean, it's really cool hearing him say, you know, that I guess even that he knew anything about what, you know, we had going on over here.
Right.
I sometimes maybe think I'm naive to think that, you know, coaches or players don't know what we're doing or don't listen. But even just, you know, that he understood the digital aspect of what we do and that sort of thing. And I think we are going to get him down here to the bar at some point.
I sure hope so. The rumor has it that he may make an appearance after the season.
Yes, and apparently a big U.S. men's national team fan.
Yes, so take that for what you will.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, I wanted to get to this because we teased up the Bill Walsh thing mm-hmm. so much and, you know, incredible. Like he said, he was forever thankful to Harbaugh for asking the follow-up. I'm forever thankful to him for sharing that with us because
100%.
I'll be thinking about that forever.
100%.
Instincts. And I think that's a broad thing, but when you see it, you know it.
Well, and just the two first downs with your legs, it sounds so simple, but when you think about, I mean, just how many times the Buffs struggle on offense this year, how many times would a first down run from Brendan Lewis or Owen McCown or JT Shrout even just fire you up and just make you believe a little bit more? You know, it's a crucial aspect. But as you said, the instincts, I mean, and coming off the heel of that Caleb Williams game against USC, we saw it firsthand.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask him this, but I didn't want to put him in an awkward position because of the other guys on the roster, especially the starting quarterback right now. But what my follow up was going to be is, don't you think Owen McCown has those two things? Or is at least getting close to having those two things. And I think instinct is the number one that I see from Owen that I don't see from the other quarterbacks on the roster, which is like just a little bit of a feel for the pressure, an understanding of where to escape the pocket, you know, knowing when to run and when to take a shot downfield, knowing when is a good time to throw up a 50-50 ball or, you know, or to throw it away. Like, When he played in the first time he was out there, that was my first reaction, was like, oh, this guy understands quarterback play. And that's what you expect from the son of an NFL quarterback, right?
100%.
And then he also has, you know, the running ability. I got, like, when I saw Owen McCown out there, I'm like, 3 years from now, he's going to look a lot like Jaden Delora.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel that way. And as you know how I feel about Jaden Delora, I love that guy. So, you know, maybe not quite as elusive, but some of that same stuff, you know, of just being able to extend a play and maybe be a little bit undersized, but play above that.
Yeah, it was great stuff. I mean, and as he mentioned, like when he got to the Bill Walsh answer to Harbaugh's question, I mean, that was gold for me, man. I was rubbing my hands. That's just such good stuff. Wish we could have talked about him more on all that stuff. But as we hinted, maybe you'll see him at the bar here sometime. Any final thoughts, I guess, before we go? Just, he's awesome. That's all I can say.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I said this after the Cal game, but I'm proud that he was the guy who stood in for us. And I think he's done about as good of a job as you could possibly do, given the circumstances that he inherited. But, you know, it just... if for a proud program and a fan base that cares a lot and in one of the darkest places we've ever been, I feel he was the right guy to take this. So hats off to Rick George for putting him in that position, and hats off to Coach Sanford for, you know, being what he has been, not just for, you know, me as a fan or the program, but especially for the players.
I think one thing that really rings true with me and Coach Sanford in his time as interim head coach is, as we talked about, it's likely that CU is probably going to hire a different guy to be head coach. But I think Coach Sanford still has set the standard for how you promote this university, how you care for these players. Just with NIL and everything going on right now, it's a huge change in the program. And seeing a guy really come in on the fly and do all of this, I think has to be very eye-opening for Rick George, and whoever's hiring the next football coach, because Sanford just did such a great job in that department. You can't possibly lose that edge you gained there.
100%.
All right. Well, it was a fantastic interview. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. We'll be back on Friday with another edition of the DMVR Buffs podcast. Thanks for listening. Let's go Buffs.
Let's go Buffs.